Hi everyone, I'm Dr. Trevor Cates. Welcome to the Spa Doctor Show, where we talk about health tips and strategies to help you be smart, sexy, and strong. On today's show, I have as my guest Dr. Maish Seibel. Dr. Seibel is a national expert in helping women in and around menopause improve their symptoms, including sleep, stress, diabetes, and weight control. And he's founder of My Menopause Magazine. In addition to patient care, Dr. Seibel does corporate consulting, speaking, workshops, and coaching. He created Health Rock, his unique brand of making health education fun and memorable. On today's show, we talk about changes that occur as women age into their 30s, 40s, and beyond, and how hormones play a role. Dr. Seibel also talks about hormone therapies and four tips to help with a smoother transition through menopause. So please enjoy the show. On today's show, I have Dr. Maish Seibel. Welcome to the show, Dr. Seibel.
A pleasure to be here.
Yeah, great. So let's start with your story. I know you've got an interesting background. So let's start with that.
Well, my story begins as a little boy in a little town in Texas with post-depression parents. And I'm not talking about the mental state here. I'm talking about the economy. And the belief was that a fat child was a healthy child. And of course, every child, their parent wants their kid to be healthy. And so I was probably an experiment in force feeding. Now, I was really kind of almost forgot about this part of my life. You know how you're able to wipe things out. But one day when I was visiting my mom, I was uncovering some of the stuff she had in her treasure chest, you know, of her special little items. And I found a picture of a little boy, 2.5 years old, on the front page of the Galveston Daily News, Galveston, Texas. That's where I grew up. And the caption on the front page, the headline said, "Mighty Might, the fattest kid in the county." And underneath it was a picture of moi. I was standing in front of the Sears and Roebuck, because in those days they actually had buildings where you went to shop, and it was Christmas time, it was a December, and it was those wonderful Christmas displays with Santa and the elves and the little snow and all that. And I was there in my pleated pants, 2.5 years old, and my vest and my coat, and I was huge, I was corpulent. And as a child, I remember going into the E.S. Levy's department store, because you know how they have the special stuff that's not for everyone in the back. And so in the back was Mr. Galashaw. And Mr. Galashaw had the husky pants. And the husky pants were for us larger individuals. And I used to go back and he used to try on the pants or show me which ones to try on. I would get them. And I really didn't realize how it affected me being identified as so fat, because it was awful, because the other kids, obviously their parents weren't doing as well, they weren't as healthy, because I was big. So I really got an insight into what it feels like to be a large person, and also an insight to the fact that people can take control of their lives and actually do something to make themselves healthier. My motivation wasn't health back then. I thought actually I could be hurting my health getting thinner, because I was so, you know, a fat baby is a healthy baby. But what I did know is it wasn't going over well with the other kids. So I really wanted to feel less self-conscious. I wanted to move away from the back of the store with Mr. Galashaw and buy my clothes with the other kids. So without overstating it too much, that's basically my origins. And I really wanted to do something to educate other people about health and wellness and what they can do to take charge of themselves.
Great. And that is definitely what you're doing. So you help people with that. That's one of the things that you help people with, correct?
Yeah. Well, my area of expertise is really women's health for women, you know, basically over 40. But menopause can occur in 10% of women before age 45, 10% of women go into menopause. So, I mean, 1 in 10,000 women goes into menopause before age 20, and 1 in 1,000 before age 30, and 1 in 100 before age 40, and 1 in 10 before 45. So we have a lot of women who are having symptoms. They don't realize they're menopause, but they are. And part of what I do is help women through this journey so they can get back control of their lives and turn a kind of a transition into a transformation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of people and a lot of women too think of menopause as something that just happens at 50. It's like this magical thing that happens at 50 and they don't have to worry about it until then. Or, you know, oh, that's something I have to worry about later on. But then they start having irregular cycles or more PMS or weight gain or different things, you know, insomnia. They
right.
don't realize that these are changes associated with our hormone changes that are leading up to menopause. And it's not menopause itself. It's not, right? It's not the sensation. The sensation of
menopause.
It's perimenopause. So
right. Because what happens is, you know, when you go through puberty, you basically go from very, very low female hormones, estrogen and progesterone, and to a transition where your hormones are very flat, and then all of a sudden they're all jumbled up. They're trying to figure out what they're supposed to do, and your mind feels jumbled, and your body feels jumbled, and these curves start happening on your hips, and your breasts start developing, and there's hair under your arms. All this stuff is going on. It's crazy. You get acne on your skin, and just everything is changing. Your brain starts changing, and there's boys all of a sudden. There's not other kids in your class. There's boys out there. And all of this is happening, and then suddenly the hormones get paired together like figure skaters, and they're perfectly synchronized, and you have these monthly periods where you could get pregnant. And maybe you do, and maybe you don't. But if 25 years goes by, and you've done with your childbearing, or if you haven't been done with it, your body's about to tell you the timeline is about to end, and then all of a sudden your hormones get all jumbled again, and your mind feels out of sorts, and your body feels out of sorts, and your breasts change, and your belly changes, your face changes. All of those things start to happen in much the same way as it did 25 years earlier. The difference is you're going from entering reproduction to exiting reproduction, and you're going on to a very exciting phase of life that starts as much as 10 years before that last menstrual period or menopause. So if you're 51, it starts at age 41, and 51 is the average age for women in this country. But for women who are going through menopause at 44 or 43, the symptoms start at 34, 33. So when you're this young woman who just had her last kid 3 years ago, and you're feeling, you know, you're in the playgroup and everything, and all of a sudden you're starting to feel warm and flushed, and everything is changing, and your weight's starting to gain, your belly's getting different, got a little crow's feet at the corner of your eyes, what the heck is happening to my body here? Maybe your brain is fogged, you want to go see a psychiatrist, you can't remember where you parked the car, you can't even remember where you parked the kids. So you have all this happening. You go to a cardiologist because you're having all these palpitations in your chest. You know, you're starting to have a change in your sex drive. You see a sex therapist. Your vagina's dry. You go and talk to the gynecologist. All this is going on, and you're only 35, 38, you know. So nobody gets all this stuff, but everybody gets some of it. So
yeah.
All very important to be aware of. Something feels like it's changing. Maybe it is.
Absolutely. And I definitely see these hormone changes. My daughter's 13 and I see these big changes going on with her, and I'm 42. And so, you know, we're on this. I think there are a lot of women that, you know, have teenage daughters that are, we're on opposite spectrums of the reproductive cycle.
Right. Same thing, only different.
Yeah. So tell us about what happens with weight gain and menopause. What are the hormone changes that are associated with those changes in weight that a lot of people see?
Well, I think a lot of it really has to do with part of it has to do with the aging process. Because as you know, as we get older, our metabolism slows down. And so as a result, we lose about 10% or 3% of our metabolism every 10 years. So if you eat the same amount of food from at 20 and 30 and 40 and 50, over that window of time, that same amount of food ultimately is going to result in a higher increase of calories, and you're going to get heavier. So just metabolism. Then there's the fact that about 5% of women at this window of time are going to start having thyroid issues, that little butterfly-shaped gland in the neck that causes our metabolism to slow down. So, you know, that's another reason for many women have changes in weight. Another reason has to do with the sedentary lifestyle of women, because many times, even though they're busy and doing a lot of stuff, a lot of people have desk jobs, they're working in that capacity, they're not as active as they used to be, they're running around in the carpooling, and they're trying to get the kid to the gym, and they're trying to get to that, and they're trying to get to the PTA meeting, and everything else, they're just sitting in the car going and commuting and so forth. So what happens is they gain weight from less activity. And then what ends up happening is you start to get more fat, and fat burns fewer calories. Fat burns about 2 calories per pound. Muscle burns about 6 calories per pound. But then there's this hormone estrogen. And estrogen is also lower. And that lower estrogen has a big impact on a lot of things. In particular, it has an impact on insulin. For instance, insulin is able to get into the cells and do more work getting the calories and the sugar from our bloodstream into our cells with the help of estrogen. And it facilitates that. And when it's lower, when estrogen is lower, there is a tendency for less of the sugar to get actually utilized. We're less efficient caloric burners. And then we end up putting it where else? Right in our bellies. So a lot of it has to do with hormone production, utilization, as well as the lifestyle and aging things that I mentioned.
Right. And then another big thing in addition to weight is stress. It seems like people are, there's a lot going on in our lives as, you know, women, you know, with children and work and social life and all those kinds of things. But mm-hmm. also our hormones can make us more susceptible to being stressed out, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Now, stress is a major factor in this world we live in. I mean, all I have to do to feel stressed is just watch the news. Matter of fact, I wrote an article in My Menopause magazine, which I edited. It was called Ban the Evening News. I don't watch the evening news because they have this concept that, you know, what you hear about late at night lasts is what you process in your brain. That's kind of what's in there working its way through. Why do I want to hear about all of the financial problems and the killings and all the bad things that are going on in the world? It's terrible. So, I mean, I banned the evening news. There's nothing important I can't find out in the morning when I can face the day with that. But stress is also part of the reality as economics come in. People are working harder. They're working longer. For women, they have such a challenging role because they have the opportunity to take care of themselves and their own lives if only they had time to do that. But they're busy taking their kids. As I mentioned, they're in the carpool trying to get through so they get to the business meeting or see the next patient or whatever they have to do. They're also running to see their parents who are now getting to be in their 80s and 90s and needing their help. They're also got husbands, you know, who just don't do a damn thing around the house or don't help near as much as they could, and they never make an appointment for themselves. So you've got your partners, you've got your kids, you've got your parents, you got your work, you got your societal responsibilities, you're in this club or at the church or wherever you volunteer and everything else. Where the hell are you? You're getting this big. And that's stressful because you don't have enough to go around. So it's part of in my menopause breakthrough program, I talk about this, the you zone. You have to have time for you or you get used up. So stress comes from that. Add into the fact with that, that as women transition towards menopause, sleep is one of the biggest complaints. It's one of the top or complaints that women have. They can't sleep. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Number one, they got all that crap on their mind that they haven't done yet that day, and they got tomorrow's another repeat. So they're thinking, how am I going to get it done yesterday? I didn't get this done. They're never present in the bed. Number two, the libido is down a little bit, potentially. And then all of a sudden, their relationship and lovemaking and that tension release and that closeness and that comfort and that thing that gets them getting to sleep is missing or reduced. And if the husband's upset because they're not doing it as often, or he's interested and she'd rather be shopping, then that's another problem. And that ends up affecting sleep, because who are you sleeping with? Well, probably the guy you're with. So that's the deal. The third part of it is the fact of the matter is that bladder changes come into the issue. And all of a sudden, that sleep through the night is now a trip to the bathroom. And of course, if you got your husband going to the bathroom, now you're passing each other like ships in the night, you know? So you're making trips to the bathroom. That's another. Then the hot flashes come up, and all of a sudden you're in a pretty good sleep, and you start to feel the hot flashes. You feel warm. You feel intense heat. You're on fire. You wake up. You throw the sheets. He wakes up from that. He's throwing the sheets. And all of this happens. Then you have the situation where estrogen gets lower. And estrogen is very important because in the process of sleep, as you know, we have this rapid eye movement or REM sleep. And REM sleep is a cyclical part. It's one of the stages of sleep. You know, first you kind of get a little tired, and then you get a little bit sleepy, and then you really get into this deeper sleep. And then you go into this rapid eye movement sleep. And then the whole thing starts all over again. And typically, in the course of a night, you go through those whole cycles, as you know, maybe four times. When estrogen gets lower, it knocks out the REM sleep. And so what happens is your restorative sleep is diminished. Your sleep restfulness is diminished. And then what happens is, what do? You wake up tired, which is what happens. So when you're tired, how much tolerance have you got for all those stresses we've been talking about? It stinks. So stress happens there. But if you are a woman who had postpartum depression, or you have panic attacks, or you are tending prone to anxiety, things that, you know, you're emotional. Those things just bother you. And all of a sudden, you add on all the stuff I'm talking about. And you add on the fact you haven't slept. And you add on that you're exhausted. And then you have these underlying issues. That's going to tip the balance. And as a matter of fact, many of the women that I see are dealing with underlying mental health things, depression, anxiety, OCD, all these kinds of normal things that are being dealt with, sometimes at just a nuisance level, and sometimes for about 10% of women at a real diagnostic level, where we're talking about clinical depression or panic attacks, where it's a real set of conditions, or anxiety disorders. And suddenly, without the dealing with the menopause, they're very distressed, and their medicine ceases to work, their life ceases to work, their relationship ceases to work. And so when you have this, when you feel this, you've got to work together with your doctor on the hormones and your doctor on the mental health stuff together to be whole, and then it can work out pretty well.
So I'm sure that a lot of people watching, listening, a lot of women are thinking, okay, he's touched on a lot of problems that I'm having. Now, what can I do about it? What should we women be doing to help balance hormones, to help manage these symptoms? I mean, we're not just going to have to suffer through this, right? There are solutions.
No, don't have to grin and bear it. No, it's, you know, that's the most important thing. I'm telling you, there's pain and suffering going on. Let's not deny it. You know, you can try to dodge the menopause bullet, but most women can't. They don't get all I said. But they get some. But the thing that's very important, the thing that's really important, is not to tough it out. The thing that's really important is to realize there are people who can help you. The thing to realize is that there's a lot of new data now on hormones. As a matter of fact, I have a book that's going to be coming out early next year called The Estrogen Window. And there's times when estrogen can actually be taken to lower the risk of heart disease, of breast cancer. That's right, you can lower your risk of breast cancer with estrogen. Dementia, yes, you can be clear-headed, but you can lower your risk of dementia, and so forth with hormones. And if you can't take hormones or won't take hormones, no matter what I tell you or anybody else tells you, there are some new medications that are available particularly. There's one for vaginal dryness. There's alternative approaches. There are many alternative approaches. We could spend a whole hour. We could spend a whole day talking about hormonal options. But the most important thing is most of the symptoms can be treated. Most of the symptoms can be reduced in intensity or potentially even eliminated if you just talk to your healthcare provider and make sure you have somebody who knows about this stuff and is going to take time with you. If somebody's running out to deliver a baby all the time, or somebody's going to give you the 8 minutes that you usually get in a typical doctor's office, you may not get the relief you need, but relief is available.
Yes. So obviously it's important for people to find a good healthcare provider to work with.
Right.
And I think the problem is that a lot of healthcare providers still believe that hormone therapy is bad, that it's going to cause breast cancer.
They do.
So,
There's two kinds of hormone treatment. Okay. I mean, by that, let me just divide up there. Make it simple in the beginning, women who don't have a uterus, who have their uterus removed, only have to take estrogen, because estrogen and progesterone together prepare the lining of the uterus for an implantation, for a pregnancy. But if you don't have a uterus, you don't need the progesterone. Now, this matters because in the Women's Health Initiative study, the study was done with estrogen and progestin. Not progesterone, but progestin. Progestin is a chemical that your body thinks is progesterone, but it's not progesterone. It's a chemical similar to. And those women, two things I want to mention. One, the women with the estrogen progestin ended up having a slightly higher risk of breast cancer, dementia, and also heart disease. Now, how much more breast cancer? Just to be clear on the amounts, they had approximately 7 more cases or 8 more cases per 10,000 women. Now, 8 cases per 10,000 women is 0.8 cases per 1,000 women or 0.08 cases per 100 women. That's less than 0.1% increase. But it is an increase, and it was a prevention study, and that's what stopped it. So at its worst, it was less than 0.1% increase. But the most important part for women to understand is in that initial study, the Women's Health Initiative, the women who got the estrogen and the progestin were ages 60 to 79. And the women who didn't get it were ages 50 to 59. Now, who do you think is going to have more problems, more health problems, 60 to 79-year-olds with or without estrogen and progestin, or 50 to 59-year-olds? It's obviously going to be you'll have more chance of disease. And that was not teased out until very recently. People didn't understand it. And so there's much I could go on. I don't want to continue on this vent, but there's a lot to talk about in this domain.
Yeah, and so we do have research now that estrogen therapy, so especially bioidentical hormone therapy, can be safe, right? When used properly, when used appropriately, it is safe.
Let's talk about bioidenticals. The answer to your question is yes. Let's get that out of the way. The answer is yes. You can use estrogens safely and with confidence, assuming this has to be individualized. You have to realize that there's some women who are, you know, particularly high risk for taking estrogen. Maybe you have abnormal bleeding going on right now, or a tendency to blood clots, or maybe you have a situation where you have some estrogen-sensitive cancer, or, you know, there may be a particular set of conditions that you have to talk about you specifically with your doctor. But generically, estrogens can be taken, especially if they are taken close to the time of menopause. And the thing about it is, bioidentical estrogens does not mean they are natural. Bioidentical hormones means that they are identical biologically to the ones that you naturally make. Now, the most common, there's basically 3 estrogens: estradiol, which is the most common, estrone, and estriol. The most common estrogen is the bioidentical one, estradiol. It's the most potent, it's the most common. And there are combinations of these that are available as well. But that's the most common. Now, bioidentical, not natural, but identical, the only plant they come from is the chemical plant. They cannot be made in the body from precursors. We don't have those enzymes. So if you're taking yams, that's good. It goes well with turkey on Thanksgiving. But it's not going to make progesterone. You have to have progesterone synthesized someplace because our bodies don't have the enzymes. But bioidentical can be found not only in compounding pharmacies, but also in FDA-approved, like, you know, the major chain store pharmacies in the forms of patches or gels or sprays, a variety of reasons. So estradiol can be found as a bioidentical in many locations. It doesn't have to only be compounded.
Correct. But it's not what's in birth control pills.
No, birth control pills are not bioidentical. They're generally a estrogen that is a chemical synthesized hormone that it's estrogen with a twist. So it's a modified estrogen, and it's not a bioidentical, no.
Okay. So it's really important for people to find someone to work with that's educated on these different forms of hormones, that's up to speed on the latest and greatest in hormone therapy.
Absolutely. And I might say, though, that in terms of blood clots, and I mean, the things that women worry about with hormones are, you know, cancer, blood clots, you know, stroke, those kinds of things. And also for the breast cancer, that's a real, real scary one. But even in the oral conjugated estrogens, and conjugated estrogens is what Premarin was, you know, that's the one that women often, you know, repulse against because it's made from horse urine. It's refined from that. And while that may be as a concept, something that's repugnant or whatever, it turns out that Premarin has been used by about maybe 10 times more people than the bioidenticals. It's been around since 1951 or something like that. There's a lot of data on it. And at the lower levels, like 0.3, and that level is really not associated, it seems, with increased strokes and increased other problems as well. So it can be taken safely at lower levels. And if it's taken close to the time of menopause, it can also be given with lesser risk of breast cancer as well. So it's important to, you know, it's not just one class versus another. It's about dose, timing, and duration.
Yeah, it's pretty complicated. It's not a simple thing. It's not that something that people can, you know, just order online and do themselves.
I spent 3 years teasing this out for this book, The Estrogen Window, and even going back and reading every paper that was available and really teasing it out, it took me going over and over and over to look at it and really get it clear. And then as an editor of My Menopause magazine, I went to every meeting and covered it as the media. I talked to the people who actually did the studies. And I pressed them the way we're talking, you know, exactly these kinds of questions. I went back and forth with them until I got an answer out of them. And it took 3 years to get this straight. So to just think you're just going to walk in and everybody's got the same information, I don't think so.
Yeah. So what are some things that women can do at home, like with food, with lifestyle, things that they can do besides going to see a doctor, besides seeing someone to help them with their hormones, what else can people do?
Well, I consider that there are four lifestyle things that are going to serve you well, no matter whether you're on hormones or not, whether you're in menopause or not. They're just going to be helpful to you. And if you're transitioning to menopause, they're going to have even an extra benefit. Number one, we talked about, and that was sleep. Shakespeare said, sleep that knits the raveled sleeve of care. He got it right. The more you are rested, the less you are distressed by everything around you that, you know, it's not so good, but hey, I'm rested. It's okay. So the more you rest, the better. Sleep is essential, and I won't talk about it beyond that because we spent time on it. Stress reduction is very important. Stress puts you into a category of having your adrenal glands go off and firing with hormones that were intended to make your heart beat faster, your eyes dilate, your respirations increase, your muscles get blood to them, you're tensed up because you're ready for battle. It's that fight or flight thing. And the thing about it is, if you're in a battle, if you're trying to win dinner or trying to save your life or run away from a fear, great. But if you are chronically distressed, all that cortisol is going and all of that is happening chronically, that's going to cause an impact on your immune system, making you more susceptible to disease. It's going to make you feel more stressed. It's going to put you at a setting that wants to store fat in your belly and cause obesity to happen. It causes your heart to be stressed. And if you ever notice when you're breathing fast from all the stress and cortisol, Americans breathe between 12 and 18 times a minute. The actual need to breathe is about 6 times a minute. I mean, if you just stopped for 1 solid minute, not an hour, not a day, 1 minute, and just stopped and took a deep breath, held it for a few seconds. If you repeated that 5 or 6 times, don't you feel calmer? Everybody's got a minute. You know, the people that smoke, they're all stressed. They go out, they find a pretty place in the neighborhood. They find that lovely tree area with the grass and everything. They get their cigarette. They take the deep breath. They keep it in so all the carcinogens can go everywhere. And, you know, they make the smoke go 10 feet. Now they have even competitions for smoke to see who can blow it the farthest. Electronic cigarettes. We've come a long way, baby. So if you just did the same thing without the cigarette, and just went out for a minute or 5 minutes and took that deep breath, held it in, let it out, that would be awesome. You would feel better. You'd lower your stress immediately. The third thing has to do with exercise. Exercise not only improves your cardiovascular, your heart situation. Exercise is one of the only things that's been shown to lower the risk of breast cancer. If you exercise regularly during the week, you lower your risk of breast cancer. Everybody's worried about breast cancer. Exercise, it will be better. Exercise is also one of the most essential things you can do to control your weight. You're building muscle, you're going to burn more calories. Going to feel better, you're going to get your endorphins going, your mind and mood are going to be better. It's all connected, all of this stuff. And it's going to make your self-esteem better because you're going to be fit, you're going to have the rest, you're going to look good, you're going to be less stressed. And the last part of it, the fourth wheel on the car, is nutrition, what you eat. Stay away from the processed foods. And, you know, there's a lot of data now on the whole gluten story and just, you know, the issue of trying to stay away from foods that are allergenic. If you listen to people like J.J. Virgin and many other people that are out there and they talk about corn and eggs and soy and peanuts and milk and a host of wheat and sugar, another important one. You talk about these food choices. They can be very important for you to avoid and substitute healthy whole foods, eating mostly vegetables and a little bit of protein. Instead of having, you know, the prime rib coming like all off of the plate, you know, and a big potato, you know, and a bunch of butter, just have, you know, some whole grain rice maybe, or you want to have some vegetables or some kind of a healthy source like that, or you could have beans, lentils, and then, you know, take a cup of meat, get, you know, the size of your palm of your hand and chop that up and stick it in, and you got plenty of protein. All the protein you need, and particularly if you eat grass-fed, seems to be better than the kinds of foods that we're getting. I mean, unfortunately, it's hard to eat well today. We seem to have buggered up our food chain. And that's a pity, but it's still possible to eat healthy. And the number one is stay away from sugar, stay away from too much bread. If you can get rid of bread, great. And if you can get away from sodas and sweet drinks and all of that, and eat whole food. So those are the lifestyle things. Exercise, really great for hot flashes. It's great for everything. So that maybe more than you wanted, but that's but that's my spiel on that. It'll help self-esteem in every part of your life.
Great. Excellent. So nice to have a well-rounded approach to medicine. It's always nice to speak with doctors that have that more holistic view of how to take care of the body. So I really appreciate your information.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to talk with you. And, you know, if people are interested in something that they can get some quick information, I have an ebook for women who are going through the changes during the change, what to expect, what you can do about it. And you can actually get that at freemenopauseebook.com, freemenopauseebook.com. You get it downloaded instantly. It'll give you a lot of these tips that I've talked about and something that you can refer to that you can just begin to rethink a little bit, perhaps this window of time, which actually can be one of the most exciting in your life.
Absolutely. Excellent. All right. And we'll have that website up on my website so that people don't have to remember that as if they're driving in their car, they're listening on the go. So thank you again so much for joining us today. Really appreciate the interview.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be with you.
I hope you enjoyed this interview today with Dr. Maish Seibel. To learn more about Dr. Seibel, you can visit my website, drtrevorcates.com. Go to the podcast page with his interview and you'll see the information and links there. And while you're there, you can subscribe to the Spa Doctor podcast on my website or on iTunes so you don't miss any of our upcoming shows. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.